above. It's like a story of love. Can you hear me? Came back only yesterday. I'm moving farther away. Won't you near me? All I needed was the love you gave.
Good evening. The time is 6:04. You're listening to Toasty Loaf on 91.5 WMFO Medford. That was Only You by Yaz. Stay tuned for more jams.
happen in a day. I might be looking out the window, and a friend might say,
come on. Hey, are you even paying attention to me right now?
but you traded for youth. Ages and honor to stand out the truth. We saw the stars and they hid from the world. You cursed the sun when it stepped to your girl. Maybe she's gone and I can't resurrect her. The truth is she doesn't need me to protect her. We know the true death, the true way of our flesh. Everyone's dying, but girl, you're not old yet. Gloves are off, the wisdom teeth are out. What you on about? I feel it in my bones. I feel it in my bones. I'm stronger now, I'm ready for the house. Such a modest man, I can't do it alone. I can't do it alone. Gloves are off, the wisdom teeth are out. What you on about? I feel it in my bones. I feel it in my bones. I'm stronger now, I'm ready for.
That was Step by Vampire Weekend from their, I think it was 2013 album, Modern Vampires of the City. And next up, we have a podcast from the Tufts Podcast Network series, It's Lit, where Tufts students interview Tufts professors about a piece of literature that has moved them in some way. In this episode, we've got computer science professor Lainey Strange, who's going to read an excerpt from Chapter 5 of Louisa May Alcott's Little Woman. Alcott envisioned this book as a means of escaping the constrictive life of the era faced and only knew too well through the March sisters, Meg, Jo, Beth, and Amy, and their experiences navigating the world independently. So after hearing Professor Strange talk about their work with her work with girls in STEM through Tufts Girls of Code, we wanted to find out more about her background. She's a computer scientist learning how to dominate She's a computer scientist learning how to navigate this male-dominated world.
From the Tufts Podcast Network, it's Lit. Conversations with Tufts professors about a piece of literature that has moved them or has stuck with them in some way.
Poor Jo blushed until she couldn't blush any redder, and her heart began to beat uncomfortably fast as she thought what she had said. For a minute, a wild desire to run away possessed her, but that was cowardly, and the girls would laugh at her, so she resolved to stay and get out of the scrape as she could.
That was an excerpt from Chapter 5 of Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. This book is another classic that was originally published in 1869. Alcott envisioned her book as a means of escaping the constrictive life women of the era faced and knew only too well through the March sisters and their experiences navigating the world independently.
Computer science professor Lainey Strange brings us into the world of strong women. She works with a group on the Tufts campus that encourages young girls to explore STEM. She's read this book many times and she'll read a part of it for us today.
So I'm going to be actually reading from Little Women, tangentially related to my field. I'm here in computer science, as you know, and one of the things I'm really passionate about is getting more women and underrepresented groups in our field. I really relate to the character Jo in Little Women, and she's a tomboy, but she's also in love with Lori, and, you know, she's really bookish, and she just has this way of, she knows who she is, part of the story is she struggles to find who she is and be okay with it. But, you know, she's like, hey, I like books, and she uses her slang and whatever. And I think the way I sort of relate that to teaching is I feel like I want students or anyone really that I work with to feel like they can be earnest the way that she is about who they are and what they like. She's like a you do you kind of character. Little Women is a story that's set during the 1800s in Massachusetts, and it's about the March women. So it's this family, four daughters, and the dad has gone off to fight in the war. He's a chaplain. He's a top one in the war. And so it's about, it's a coming of age story. They're figuring out who they are and how they want to live and what their lives are going to be like with and without their dad around, and what it means to sort of be who they are. So Joe, who's my favorite character, is, what is she, the second oldest maybe? And she's, you know, she doesn't really fit in. It's the 1800s and she has no interest in sewing or like dances or whatever. And so this excerpt that I'm going to read is when she's talking to her boyfriend, Lori, and they've, or her friend, Lori, and they've only just met. They're at his house, and she's just in her earnest way again, just like so excited about the books that he has and wanting to talk to his grandpa. And usually people find that off-putting, so she tries to hold herself back, and he's like, no man, like this is cool, like you're awesome, which is a part that I really like. Joe is speaking, and she says, you ought to go and make an effort visiting everywhere that you're asked, and then you'll have plenty of friends. Never mind being bashful. It won't last long if you keep going. Lori turned red again, but wasn't offended at being accused of bashfulness, for there was so much goodwill in Joe that it was impossible not to take her blunt speeches as kindly as they were meant. Do you like your school? Asked the boy, changing the subject, after a little pause during which he stared at the fire and Joe looked around her, well pleased. I don't go to school. I'm a businessman. Girl, I mean. I go to wait on my great aunt, and a dear cross old soul she is too, answered Joe. Lori opened his mouth to ask him another question, but remembering just in time that it wasn't manners to make too many inquiries into people's affairs, he shut it again and looked uncomfortable. Joe liked his good breeding and didn't mind having a laugh at Aunt March, so she gave him a lively description of the fidgety old lady and her fat poodle and the parrot that talked Spanish and the library where she reveled. Lori enjoyed that immensely. And when she told about the prim old gentleman who came once to woo Aunt March, and in the middle of a fine speech, how Paul had tweaked off his wig to his great dismay, the boy lay back and laughed until the tears ran down his cheeks and a maid popped her head in to see what was the matter. Oh, this does me no end of good. Tell on, please, he said, shaking his face out of the sofa cushion, red and shining with merriment. Much elated with her success, Joe did tell on, all about their plays and plans, their hopes and fears for father, and the most interesting events of the little world in which she and the sisters lived. They got to talking about books, and to Joe's delight, she found that Lori loved them as well as she did, and read even more than herself. If you like them so much, come down and see ours. Grandfather is out, so you needn't be afraid, said Lori, getting up. I'm not afraid of anything, returned Joe with a toss of the head. I don't believe you are, exclaimed the boy, looking at her with much admiration, though he privately thought she would have good reason to be a trifle afraid of the old gentleman if she met him in some of his moods. The atmosphere of the whole house being summer-like, Lori led the way from room to room, letting Joe stop to examine whatever struck her fancy. And so, at last they came to the library, where she clapped her hands and pranced, as she always did when especially delighted. It was lined with books, and there were pictures and statues and distracting little cabinets full of coins and curiosities, and sleepy hollow chairs and queer tables and bronzes, and best of all, a great open fireplace with quaint tiles all around it. What richness, sighed Joe, sinking into the depth of a velour chair and gazing about her with an air of intense satisfaction. Theodore Lawrence, you ought to be the happiest boy in the world, she added impressively. A fellow can't live on books, said Lori, shaking his head as he perched on a table opposite. Before he could move, a bell rang, and Joe flew up, exclaiming with alarm, Mercy me, it's your grandpa! Well, what if it is? You're not afraid of anything, you know, returned the boy, looking wicked. I think I'm a little afraid of him, but I don't know why I should be. Marmy said I might come, and I don't think you're any the worse for it, said Joe, composing herself, though she kept her eyes on the door. I'm a great deal better for it, and ever so much obliged. I'm only afraid that you were very tired of talking to me. It was so pleasant I couldn't bear to stop, said Lori gratefully. The doctor to see you, sir, and the maid beckoned as she spoke. Would you mind if I left you for a minute? I suppose I must see him, said Lori. Don't mind me. I'm happy as a cricket here, said Joe. Lori went away, and his guest amused herself in her own way. She was standing before a fine portrait of the old gentleman when the door opened, and without turning, she said decidedly, I'm sure now that I shouldn't be afraid of him, for he's got kind eyes, though his mouth is grim, and he looks as if he had a tremendous will of his own. He isn't as handsome as my grandfather, but I like him. "Thank you, ma'am," said a gruff voice behind her, and there, to her great dismay, stood old Mr. Lawrence. Poor Jo blushed until she couldn't blush any redder, and her heart began to beat uncomfortably fast as she thought what she had said. For a minute, a wild desire to run away possessed her, but that was cowardly, and the girls would laugh at her, so she resolved to stay and get out of the scrape as she could. A second look showed her that the living eyes under the bushy eyebrows were kinder even than the painted ones, and there was a sly twinkle in them which lessened her fear a good deal. The gruff voice was gruffer than ever as the old gentleman said abruptly, after the dreadful pause, "So you're not afraid of me, eh?" "Not much, sir." "And you don't think me as handsome as your grandfather?" "Not quite, sir." "And I've got a tremendous will, have I?" "I only said I thought so." "But you like me in spite of it?" "Yes, I do, sir." That answer pleased the old gentleman. He gave a short laugh, shook hands with her, and putting his finger under her chin, turned up her face, examined it gravely, and let it go, saying with a nod, "You've got your grandfather's spirit, if you haven't his face. He was a fine man, my dear, but what is better, he was brave and an honest one, and I was proud to be his friend." "Thank you, sir." And Jo was quite comfortable after that, for it suited her exactly. "What have you been doing to this boy of mine, eh?" was the next question, sharply put. "Only trying to be neighborly, sir," and Jo told how her visit came about. "You think he needs cheering up, do you?" "Yes, sir. He seems a little lonely, and young folks would do him some good, perhaps. We are only girls, but we should be glad to help if we could, for we don't forget the splendid Christmas present you sent us," said Jo eagerly. "Tut, tut, tut, that was the boy's affair. How is the poor woman?" "Doing nicely, sir," and off Jo went, talking very fast as she told all about the Hummels, in whom her mother had interested her richer friends than they were. "Just her father's way of doing good. I shall come and see your mother some fine day. Tell her so. There's the tea bell. We have it early on the boy's account. Come down and go on being neighborly. If you'd like to have me, sir." "Shouldn't ask you if I did." Mr. Lawrence offered his arm with old-fashioned courtesy. "What would Meg say to this?" thought Jo, as she was marched away while her eyes danced with fun as she imagined herself telling the story at home.
This book is about a lot of different females coming of age, and it's about sisterhood and female friendship. I'm just wondering why you chose a chapter with two men in her life. I think that's interesting.
Oh, that's an interesting point. What I was looking for really was something that spoke to Jo's character, and I sort of feel like she's more herself when she's away from her family. I guess that's not always true, but I get that. I think that character Jo is sort of portrayed that way, that when she's at home, especially with her older sister Meg, she's trying really hard to do the right thing, because Meg is always encouraging her to, you know, the right thing being like the more traditional, what's expected of her kind of thing. So, and she doesn't want to disappoint Meg. But when she's out in the world, she's a little bit more freewheeling.
How do you think this book has helped you better understand those kind of female relationships?
So I have an older sister, but she's actually a trans woman. So growing up, I had a brother. And I think it's, you know, certainly the way that she and I relate to each other has changed since she transitioned. And I think it's been, you know, I don't think I like reread this book at that time, but just having sort of that, these four sort of sister relationships, like, helps me think about how do I relate to my sister now that she's my sister, right? Kind of a thing. Again, I don't know if I did that directly, but certainly subconsciously, because I've read this book so many times, of sort of understanding how sisters can and should support each other. Like, you see a lot of that in this book. And there's also a lot of, you know, we talked earlier on about trying within your family, feeling like you have to meet certain expectations, which I think is not good. So I certainly try in my own relationships in my family, especially with my sister, not to have expectations about what she should do or what she should be or what she should behave like or act like or look like. It's you know, a little bit of a lesson in what not to do, maybe some of the flaws in the characters that we see. So I hope that it's an influence for the positive in how I interact with the other women in my life.
This novel was published in 1869, but do you still think it has some relevance today in terms of women and their roles in society?
So women in STEM, right, is a passion close to my heart, and one of the things that I feel like both works for women in STEM and against us is that sometimes people advocating for women in STEM or for more women in STEM will say things like, well, women are more sensitive, so you have to give them more time in meetings or things like that, which are trying to be helpful and not trying to exclude people. Or women are more nurturing, right? That kind of thing, which I do not relate to. And so it's like a subtle part of the advocacy for women in tech that, the way the sort of old boys network is now is not good, but making it, encouraging more women in this field and making it more open and inclusive around women doesn't mean, or underrepresented groups in general, doesn't mean that we have to soften things, which is sometimes the argument. So that's sort of what I see shining through, even from this old timey book from the 1860s, where it's a little bit the same, right? Where Joe is expected to be soft and nurturing because that's what women are. And we don't all have to be like that. Everyone has their own sensibility. Honestly, I think one of the things that hurts computer science the most is there's this myth that everything is totally objective all the time. Because when you go for a job interview, you know, you do a technical interview, you have to answer technical questions. It's sort of like taking a test. Oh, and if you pass the test, you're in. So we're totally objective. We're not biased. Like, we're just grading you on exactly what you know and what you can do, which, of course, is not true. That's, you know, the whole field of study of implicit bias is saying, like, oh, hey, you're trying to be fair, but you're actually not. And you see the name on the resume, and if it's a woman named Sally or a man named Tyrone, you're not going to take them as seriously. Because we can tell ourselves, this is a technical field. Like, we're just following the rules and, like, doing the thing. Without realizing how it can actually be really exclusive. When people who are underrepresented are now part of the conversation, it makes such a big difference in how you hire and how you think about building products, who you're building them for, like what you need to prioritize. All these kinds of things are different.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think that's it. Yeah, thank you so much for letting us interview.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. This has been It's Lit.
Yay. Good. Cool.
Again, that was It's Lit from the Tufts Podcast Network, produced by myself and my co-host, Shirley Wong. You can tune in next week for the next episode, and you can also find more at tuftspodcastnetwork.com. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back with more music.
Driving means
freedom,
exploration,
fun,
pride,
flexibility,
travel, protection,
ability, friendship,
escape, independence.
Distracted driving means
danger,
recklessness,
irresponsible,
chaos,
police,
devastation,
injury,
tears,
death.
Safe driving means staying alert and staying alive.
Visit StopTechStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
most my favorite characters are. I think your lives are more special. I love you, but you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
This has been Toasty Loaf on WMFO 91.5 FM. Tune in same time next week, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Next up, we have Live Free or Die, so stay tuned.